We're on Daf Chaf Beis Amud Aleph, and we started a sugya yesterday. We almost finished it, but we didn't get to finish it. So therefore, I think we should just review the basics, get the background, and then we'll be able to finish it up in Mirtz Hashem. So the sugya, part of which we did yesterday, begins with Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and that follows the two dots, approximately 15 lines down from the top of the Amud, and the first word in the line is Erech. That word Erech belongs to the Agadita that we covered yesterday and the day before yesterday, and the Gemara quotes Rabbi Yehuda Shita. Rabbi Yehuda is worried about Pasei Bros, if they encompass too large of an area, which is called a Beis Asayim, and we allow Tiltul within the Pasei Bros in such a large area, then one might confuse that with what's called a Karpaf, which is an area that was surrounded by Mechitzos, and it's larger than a Beis Asayim, which we said was 5,000 square amos. And the Rabbanan considered such an area so large as if it's like a Rishus HaRabim, and they prohibited carrying within that area. So Rabbi Yehuda, now Mishnah, argues that if we're going to allow carrying in a Bein HaPasim situation, Pasei Bros, if it's an area that is larger than a Beis HaSayim, people will mistakenly think that you're allowed to carry in a Karpaf. So to protect the enactment of Karpaf, which we'll have later on in our perek, therefore Rabbi Yehuda says they have to prohibit a Pasei Bros situation where it's the size of a Karpaf. It means it's more than a Beis HaSayim. Now the Gemara has the following suffix, Yiboyelahu. The first side is called Bar Upasim, and the second is called Bar Velopasim. And the question is the following. If the bar itself is a base sasayim, let's say it's exactly that measurement, but then you have the area outside the bar, which is being encircled by the pasim. According to the first side in the Gemara, we're going to be machmir, we're going to say bar velo pasim ka'omar. In other words, the Beis HaSayim, which once we hit that number, that area that's so large, is prohibited according to Rabbi Yehuda, we have to consider the bar and the pasim. In other words, when calculating that ceiling, that maximum, that we're allowed up to Beis HaSayim but not beyond, we have to calculate not only the area of the bar, but the area beyond the bar that is enclosed by the pasim. So let's say, for example, you had a bar that was a Beis HaSayim. In addition, beyond the bar, you have the area between the bar and the pasim. So you've already exceeded beyond the limit. You've got now Beis HaSayim plus, and that's going to be also, that's going to be prohibited until according to the first side in Rabbi Yehuda, which is called Bar Upasim. The second possibility was Bar Velopasim, which means that we're not going to calculate the area outside the bar. So if the bar itself is a Beis HaSayim, then you're okay. You're good to go. And you could be metaltel outside the bar. Even though the area outside the bar, if you would add it to the Beis HaSayim of the bar, you'd be beyond the limit. It doesn't matter. What we need is that the bar be up to but not beyond the Beis HaSayim. What happens outside the bar, that's irrelevant. Now there's a long note here in the Masifta, which I began to study, and It revolves around the following issue. There's a standard requirement outside the bar of an area between the bar and the possum. That standard is called Rosho Veruba Shalpara. We'll call it two amos. So you're allowed to put the possum as close to the bar as two amos in the radius around the bar. And one opinion in the Rishonim is that when the Gemara vacillates back and forth about Rabbi Yehuda in this Ibailahu, we're talking about two amos. We're only talking about that standard two amos. So that if you go with the second approach of bar velo pasim, then you could be mekil even if the two amos beyond the bar, which are the minimum, the two amos minimum area that separates the bar from the pasim, that's where we could be mekil, and we could say, let's give you that allowance of an extra two amos. That's the second side called bar velo pasim, which is the kula. We're going to give you an allowance above the base of sasayim, if the bar is a base of sasayim, in that extra two amos beyond the bar, between the bar and the pasim. There's another school of thought here in the Rishonim, and he identifies this as the Rambam and the Ritva, the Bartnura. They hold Af b'shetach shemichutz lebar hashir hu ad sasayim, which is an amazing kula, and he's going to allow you from the bar, which itself is a base sasayim, until the pasim, an area of another base sasayim. So basically, you're going to multiply 5,000 amos by 2, and we're going to allow you to separate and distance the bar from the pasim a full base sasayim. So you got one base sasayim, which is the bar. You've got another base sasayim, which is outside the bar, leading you all the way up to the pasim, and that's all mutter, according to the second sad in the Gemara. Whereas the other approach, again, just to reiterate, is that the only allowance in the second sad in the Gemara of Baru Pasim is for an area of two amos. That's all we're going to allow you. And this Machlokas Rishonim really has to do with the next piece of Gemara that we started yesterday, but I want to finish up today, and that's about Rav Shimon ben Gamliel.
Rabbi?
Yes.
I apologize. I must have blanked out when you said it. What's the 2,000 amos? You said that's...
No, I meant to say 5,000 amos. If I said 2,000 amos, it's my fault.
Two amos. So you said...
Oh, two amos, yeah.
Yeah, well, you said that's standard for something, and I didn't...
Right. The minimum, in other words, let's say I want to set up my possum, the four possum, right around the bar, as close to the bar as I can.
Uh-huh.
Because, all I need is a small area. I just have to get the water out of the well. So there's a minimum requirement of Rosho Verubo Shalpara.
Right.
So we're going to identify Rosho Verubo Shalpara in meters, in area, as two amos.
Ah, okay.
So that's the minimum standard requirement of distance between the bar and the possum. You can't have less than two amos. You can't put the possum right directly around the bar. Why? Because we want you to be able to feed your cow, so we want the cow to go in there Otherwise, you're going to take the pail of water, as we discussed, and you're going to go out of the Bein HaPasim. So we want to have room, you know, as we discussed many times, you know, space for the animal within the Pasim, so that he can take the water out of the bar and feed the cow in that area of Rishus HaYochid, which is set aside and surrounded by the Pasim. So that one school of thought in Rishonim will interpret the second Tzad, which is the Kula, called Baru Pasim, allowing you that, you know, standard minimum amount, which is an absolute requirement for a distance between the bar and the pasim, which is 2 amah. Okay. The second opinion, which is the Rambam, that goes way, way beyond that. You know, then we're talking about an area which, let's say the bar itself is 5,000 square amah. Now we're adding another 5,000 square amah between the bar and the pasim. Again, you may remember that in the Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek, we said that if you go beyond the 10 amos and the 13 and a third amos, then you're going to have to add extra pasim and so forth and so on. But ultimately, the sky's the limit. You know, you can set up, well, now we're saying it's not the sky's the limit, but the base asayim is the limit, meaning, you know, if I had asked you on a quiz question, what is... These are the two questions. What is the minimum distance between the bar and the pasim? And then I would ask you a second question. What is the maximum distance between the bar and the pasim? Then according to one school of thought, which is represented by the Rambam, the minimum... Well, this answer is according to everyone. That's in the Mishnah. The minimum amount of distance that you have to require is the 2 amas of Rosh Hashanah Veruba Shel Parah. But the maximum, according to the Rambam, is a full base osayim, which means that the bar itself has a base osayim, and now outside of the bar there's another base osayim. And it's still mutter, according to the second side of the Gemara, in Rabbi Yehuda, the way the Rambam understands.
So one more question.
Yeah.
So when we say that it's the bar itself, it's not really the bar itself. There has to be at least a minimum of 2 amos or the maximum of 2 besai.
Again, that's outside the bar.
You
know,
so outside the bar, because right. You can't just have the bar itself. You have to have some space. So,
right.
But when the Gemara uses the language bar itself, it doesn't mean just the bar itself. There's two interpretations. One, that it's the bar plus 2 amos, and the bar plus besai.
Correct.
Right.
In that side, that's bar velo pasim, does it mean bar plus 2 amos outside the bar,
right,
and the bar itself is a base osayim, or does it mean the bar is a base osayim and the area outside the bar is a base osayim? That's the Rambam.
Yeah.
Okay. Now the Gemara analyzes this suffix. What are the two tzadim in the suffix? The first side is called Adam Nosen Eino Biboro, and the second side is Adam Nosen Eino Bimechitzaso. According to the first side, when a person looks at this enterprise, this entity called Pase Bros, what he sees is the bar. Why? Because the entire enterprise allowing these pasim is for the sake of the bar. In fact, we had a long discussion, if you recall, about what happens if the bar dries up. It could be the whole enterprise falls to the wayside. You can't have pasim around a non-existent bar, right? So the bar is the primary feature of this entire kit and caboodle, which is called Pase Bro. So it's all the bar. So when a person thinks about the area that this Bein pasim is allowing, he looks at the bar. And therefore, and this is going to be the second side in the Gemara here, which is called Bar Velo Pasim, if the bar is not beyond, it's not above the base Asayim, doesn't have more than 5,000 square amah, then you're okay. I don't care what's on the other side of the bar. Because when a person looks at this enterprise, what he sees in the eye of his mind, is the bar itself. So that this base asayim, that shear, is in the bar. And the second by the Omer says, no. When a person looks at this enterprise, he's looking at the pasim. because ultimately his goal is to be able to draw water from the bar into the area of Bein HaPasim. And that area, by virtue of the Pasim, is generated the status of Rosh HaSayachin. So he's looking at the whole enterprise. So it's got to be critical that there's up to, but not beyond, the base of Sayim inside the Mechitzos, meaning inside the Pasim. Then those are the two studies. So we started yesterday with Toshma, and the Gemara wants to quote a Braisa and try to prove from this Braisa one way or the other about this Suffolk in Rabbi Yehuda. The Braisa opens up with Kama Heim Mikoravim, and now the Braisa is asking my first of the two quiz questions that I asked you: what's the minimum distance between the bar and the Pasim? And the answer is Kidei Rosha Veruba Shalpara. You should have enough area between the bar and the Pasim that would allow you to bring the animal inside, at least most of the animal inside, which we said was 2 amos, so that he could feed the cow. Okay, now we get to the other question. Kama Hei Meruchakim. What is the maximum distance? The minimum is 2 amos. We're talking about the distance again between the bar and the Pasim. What's the maximum distance? So we have a Tanakama and we have Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanakama says, Afilu Kar, Afilu Karayim. We're talking about a massive area. As if to say the sky's the limit. Now, if you're interested, he's got a footnote here which calculates exactly what it means, kar or karayim. Kar, he says, is a field that's large enough to plant 30 saws worth of grains, and it's equal to 75,000 square amos. You know, we've been talking about an area of a karpaf which is 5,000 square amos. Now we're talking about an area of 175 square amos. That's a kur. And he breaks it down into the length and the width. And he says it's 274 amos by 274 amos. And you end up with 75,000 amos. Now you have an area called a kurayim. Kurayim means 2 kurs. And he calculates that that's an area of 150,000 square amos, which is 388 amos in length and in width. Again, to make a long story short, the sky's the limit. The Tanakhama is not going to, he's not going to say, well, your area between the bar and the pasim is too wide. No. However, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ad shir shall base sasayim mutar yesem base sasayim osur. That the area outside the bar, between the bar and the pasim, is maxed out at a base sasayim. Because once again, if we're going to allow him to carry in that area, which is larger than a base sasayim, he's going to draw the conclusion that if you have an area of a base of sasayim that's surrounded by mechitzos, then you're allowed to carry there. And that's the Isur of Karpaf, which, the Gemara is going to establish a little bit later on. The Rabbanon prohibited such a wide area, even if it's surrounded by mechitzos. So maybe we should come back to our discussion about a golf course, because maybe the golf course fits into the core Karayim, I don't know. Anyway, now, at this particular point in the discussion, we're really not, it's not relevant to our suffix. I mean, our suffix was about the size of the bar and how much we could perhaps add outside the bar, even beyond basis sign. This braisa, until we get to Reb Shimon ben Elazar, is not discussing our question. This Bryce is addressing the question of what kind of an area between the bar and the possum could lend itself to the heter of the possum, so that we could be metaltal in such a large area. And Rabbi Yehuda is going to cap it off at Beis Sasan. Now, here, at this point in the Braisa, which again is not directly relevant to us because we're waiting for, you know, Rav Shimon ben Elazar, he's, you know, we're going to give a standing ovation, he's the exciting one here. But in the meantime, when we speak about the area of a Beis Sasayim outside of the bar, and we're identifying that with a Karpaf, and therefore Yehuda says it's Osir if you go beyond the Beis Sasayim, that's a bit of a problem. Because there's a list in our Mishnah back on Daf Yud Ches of four different areas. We'll call them parks, I'll just use that term, and we'll see what I mean by that, which are larger than a Beis Sasayim. They're surrounded by mechitzos, and you're allowed to be metaltel there. And the rule of thumb is as follows. You know, when does the Gzera and the Iser of Karpaf come into play? That's called an area Shalo Hukaf Lidira. It's really just, shall we call it, a hefker land. You know, maybe there are animals that graze there, maybe not, I don't know. Once it's Hukaf Lidira, which means Tashmishim, that there's someone who enjoys the benefit of that area, maybe that's where he plays golf, I don't know, but and it's near his house, so then the Iser of Karpaf doesn't apply. And therefore the Chachamim are going to stand up and argue against Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, what are you worried about? You're saying that if the distance between the bar and the possum is more than a Beis Sasayim, it should be also because it's basically a Karpaf. It's not a Karpaf, because that's the area where you want to bring in your cows and your animals, and you want to give them a drink from the well. That's why you set up the possum around there. You have a large flock of cows, or sheep, whatever you have, and you needed that very large area for your tashmishin. So that's what Omru Lo L'Rabbi Yehuda. So the Chachamim argued against Rabbi Yehuda. Iyata Modeh, don't you agree in the following four cases that even though the Mechitzos surround a very, very large area, much larger than a basis of time, nevertheless we're allowing Tiltil there? What are these four areas? That's Deer, Sahar, Muktzeh, and Chotzer. And there's a lot to discuss here in each one of these four cases. I'm just not sure if now's the right time to do it. But just on a very superficial level, a deer is a place where he brings in his animals and they work there in the fields. A sahar is the same as a deer, but instead of being outside in the area where he has his fields, outside the city, it's outside the limits of the city, this is inside the city. Then he has something called mukta, which is a backyard, and he has chotzer, which is a front yard. So he's got a courtyard in the front, a backyard, and sometimes, I guess, if you're wealthy enough and you get a good deal, you could buy acres and acres of land either in your backyard or in your front. When I was in Canada, I rented a house that had a very large backyard. I used to watch a certain rabbit that used to, you know, jump around in the backyard. It was very cute. Anyway, so you could have a backyard that's very large. And afilu beis chamisha chameshes kurin or beis haseres kurin mutar. In these four cases, and Rabbi Yehuda is not going to deny this, since these areas are surrounded by mechitzas, no matter what the size is, again, now you're talking about haseres kurin. You know, we said that two kurin was an area of 150,000 square avos. And imagine multiplying that by 5 or 10. You know, it's a gigantic area. And yet, you're allowed to carry there because it's surrounded by mechitza. So we're not going to give it the status of a karpaf. Why? Because each one of these areas has a function. It's being used. It's, again, in inverted commas, I would call it residential, meaning it's connected to your residence. Certain things you do in your house as part of residence, and certain things you do outside your house. And if you use these areas that are very large outside your house, then those yards and areas are considered mutter. You're allowed to be metaltal there. It's like an extension of your house, as opposed to a park, which is not used for dira. It's not attached to any residence, and there we're going to have a limit of a karpaf of beis asayim. So the Gemara is accusing Rabbi Yehuda in the case of Pasi Baros of overstepping his bounds by equating Pasi Baros in a very large area between the bar and the pasim with karpa. We should equate it with these kinds of cases which are residential in nature. Why are they residential in nature? Or let's say it this way, why should we compare Bena HaPasim to these areas? And apparently the answer is because he's set up these pasim in for the express purpose of feeding his animals, meaning giving drink to his animals. That itself should be like a chotzer. And in the light of that equation, there should be no limit in terms of its area, its size. Amar lahem, so Rabbi Yehuda responds to this argument, and he says that there's no equation. Why? Zo mechitza v'elu pasim. You can't equate a machitza with pasim. It's in a large area, which is quote-unquote residential, meaning that you use it as your backyard. We're going to allow you to carry there because you have full-fledged machitzos that surround that large area. But in the case of Pasi Bros, we're not talking about machitzos, we're talking about pasim. As we discussed at the very beginning of this perek, we're talking about Paritz Merubala Omed. So you're talking about something that doesn't even look vaguely similar to a machitza, and the Rabbanan are going to allow it, but here we have to consider as if the people, when they see this area, they don't even see machitzos. Nobody sees machitzos. It looks like a karpaf, and it's a very large area, and you're carrying therein. Well, you're going to equate that with a karpaf, and you're going to come to the mistaken conclusion that you're allowed to carry in a karpaf. Not so in the case of a chotzer and a sar, and mukta and deer. There, despite the large area, but everyone knows, and it's obvious to the eye, that this large area is surrounded by full-fledged mechitzos. And therefore it's mut. So that chotzer, etc., is not going to be mistaken for a karpaf. No one's going to equate, and no one's going to compare a chotzer and all the rest over here to a karpaf. And that's not true for Bein HaPasim really looks like a karpaf. We can't allow it if it has that large dimension of being Beis Asayim.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Why didn't they use the argument that these are, Rabbi Yehuda did use the argument that we can't deem these to be karpaf because they're near residential areas, whereas a karpaf usually you don't associate. Not a karpaf. You don't associate the wells for the reglayim, which are in the middle of nowhere. They're off the highway, so it's a non-residential area. In fact, I thought that's what we were originally talking about, is a non-residential area. And these four cases are residential areas. So why did they make that distinction?
No, you're 100% right. I was bothered by the same question that you're bothered by. Perhaps the answer to your question, I don't know if this is totally satisfying, it needs a lot more study, and that is that Rav Yehuda doesn't even want to get into the debate with the Chachamim as to whether or not Bein HaPasim is considered dira, whether it's considered a residential area. It doesn't connect to any particular person. and yet it is to some extent tashmish. So instead of dira, which means resonance, let's substitute a different word, which is called tashmish. Tashmish means you have some definite use. And if we see the public, you know, like the Ole Regel and so forth, that they have a definite use from this area around the well, then I don't even want to argue with you. I'll be willing to tell you that maybe that's considered a resonance. But what I will argue with you is nobody sees the mechitzos. These are pasim. And although the Rabbanon validated these pasim and upgraded them to the status of mechitzos, to the naked eye, what you're seeing is a karpaf. You're really seeing it just a wide open area. Would Rabbi Yehuda add another point that this is not considered a tashmish, it's not lidira? That's an excellent question. I don't know. But let's see if we can get to the punchline of this whole sugya, and that is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. He says, Bar, Beis Asayim, a Beis Asayim, Mutter. Velo Omru Laharchik, Elikide Rosha Veruba Shalpara. And basically what's happening here in Rav Shimon ben Elazar, excuse me, is that if the bar reaches that pinnacle, which is 5,000 amos square, then all we're going to allow him beyond that is 2 amos, meaning the area in which he can get Rosh HaVeruba, not beyond that. Why? Because we're going to allow that minimum area above the Beis HaSayim, but not beyond. Now let's understand. Fundamentally, Rav Shimon Elazar is on the same radar screen, if you will, as Rav Yehuda. He's also very worried about people coming to the mistaken conclusion that if you're allowed to carry Veina Pasim, then you're allowed to carry in a Karpaf. That trend of thought is common to both Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda. But Rav Shimon takes a stand on the issue that we were vacillating about. Namely, how much beyond the Beis HaSayim of the bar itself will we allow before we introduce the Gzeira of Karpaf, if you follow what I mean. And we'll say you're not allowed to carry it. And the maximum allowance, according to Rav Shimon, is Kidei Rosho Veruba Shel Parah. Any area beyond that, assuming the bar, and that's the case Rav Shimon is addressing, is a Beis HaSayim, is prohibited. So that imagine, and this is probably the regular classic case, that outside the bar, you've placed your pasim at a distance of Lomazogin 10 amos. Classic, right? According to Rabbi Meir, you want to add the 13 and a third according to Rabbi Yehuda, fine. Says Rabbi Shimon, we're not going to allow tiltil. Now we're going to be afraid of a confusion with a karpaf. Why? Because although we allowed the bar to be Beis HaSayim, we even allowed an additional 2 amos beyond the Beis HaSayim, but beyond that, we're not going to allow it. That's already a gzeir of Karpov. So the Gemara wants to say, is there a machlokas here between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon? Mida ka'amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Bar v'lo pasim. Interesting. The second side of the Gemara was bar v'lo pasim. That was a kula that were going to allow him above and beyond the Beis HaSayim in terms of the area outside of the bar. The bar itself is a Beis HaSayim, and that's called bar v'lo pasim. And again, how much of an area are we going to allow up to Rosh HaVeruba, which we said we identified as 2 amos. Michlal, the Rabbi Yehuda, bar upasim ka'omar. If Rav Shimon Elazar is adding a comment here to this brisa, it must be that he's dissenting with what came before him, namely the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Otherwise, we don't find a debate and an afkamina between the two shitas in this brisa. And therefore the Gemara assumes that the nafkamina between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in this brisa is that whereas Rabbi Shimon maintains bar v'lo pasim, it must be that Rabbi Yehuda holds bar upasim. Which means that the total area that we're going to allow you, including both the bar and the area outside the bar, ben apasim, is beis asayim, nothing more. We're not even going to allow in the two amos of Rosha v'ruba shel para. And that's the first side in the Gemara of bar v'lo of bar. Sorry, of bar upasim, right? That's the first side in the Gemara. And now we have a final. The Gemara is going to reject it, but right now we have a final answer to our original suffix. So Rabbi Yehuda, by process of elimination, since he cannot be the same identical sheet as Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon holds bar v'lo pasim, then it must be Rabbi Yehuda holds bar upasim. V'lohi. The Gemara says there's no proof. Why? Rabbi Yehuda bar v'lo pasim komar. Rabbi Yehuda also agrees to Rabbi Shimon Elazar that it's bar v'lo pasim, which means we're going to allow him a full beis asayim in the bar, and we're not going to calculate and integrate the bein apasim outside the bar into the calculation of beis asayim, and we're going to give him that allowance of an extra two amos. So what's the machlokas here? I mean, our premise is if the brisa quotes Rav Shimon Elazar, it must be that Rav Shimon Elazar is arguing against Rabbi Yehuda. Ika beinayu arich v'katin, which means the following: that Rav Shimon Elazar requires that the bar itself be square and not rectangular, meaning it shouldn't have a greater length and a width. And that's called orich v'katin, meaning the length is so-and-so and the width is so-and-so, but they're not equal, so you don't have a square. It's eino meruba. Meruba means squared. L'das Rabbi Yehuda, ein ashir toli el begodlo shel habar. I don't care what the length and the width is. Let's just calculate the square footage. How many amos square do you have in this bar? But eino tzarch shiyeh meruba, doesn't have to be a square. Ve'ilu l'das from Shimon Elazar, she'amar shashir beis asayim a beis asayim. If we're careful reading the language of Rav Shimon meticulously, he says beis asayim a beis asayim, which means that both the length and the width have the same identical measurement, and therefore you have a perfect square. If it's not so, then lohuchu pase biros bibar, you cannot be matir pase bros if the total square area is equal to beis asayim. We could only be matir an area as large as a beis asayim according to Rav Shimon if that bar is a square. So the final maskana seems to be, or at least the Gemara is open to the possibility of bar v'lo pasim, and that's the kula, and certainly Rav Shimon maintains that position. We're not 100% sure, but we think that even Rabbi Yehuda would agree with him on that. But as far as allowing the bar to be a beis asayim, is it a square, or even if it's not squared off? That's a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Shimon. Klal Omer Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Kol Avir Shetashmisho Ledira, and this is the end of the Braisa, Kigon, Dir Vesar Muksa V'chotzer, Afilu Beis Kameshes Kurim, Ubeis Asara Kurim Mutter. In other words, under what circumstance or conditions is there no karpav, and therefore it's mutter? And the answer is avir shetashmisho ledira, which means that you have an open area, and people go in and out of that area, and they use it. Tashmish, they use it lidira, for some sort of residential purpose. He tells you that he already wrote about this back on Daf Yud Ches. Why is a deer called Tashmisho lidira? I'll just very quickly see if I can find that. It's... Let's see, here it's Regilim Hayu Ligdar Chalokim and Asados Lasem Dir Lebehemos. I'm not sure Yizbu as Asod Vigolehem. He says the following, that the animals gave fertilizer, so there were certain areas in the fields that would be designated for the animals, that the animals would stay there and fertilize. And then when that Shetach was fertilized, they would move the animals to another area. And that's called deer. So that's also included on the Tashmisha Ledira. V'chol Dira Shetashmisha La'avir. In other words, let's say you have an area which has to be protected. We don't want people going in there. So we set up these little sukkot. Is tashmisho la'aver kigon burganin shevasodos, right? So they used to set up these little huts where the security men used to put themselves down so that they could protect the fields. Is then in those cases. Is basis asayim mutter, but yes, in basis asayim osur. That's not called dira, because that's only for protective purposes. It's not like the case where you set up your animals to stay there and so forth and so on. And therefore, if it's more than a basis asayim, it has the status of a karpav. And it's called ein tashmisha ledira, and you're not allowed to be metaltal if it has more of an area. Beyond base sasai. And now we're up to the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Imhoya derech rishus harabim afsakosan, yisalkeno litzdonin. If the highway on which the people, the masses of the public, travel is between the pasim, then we have a principle called rabim mevatlim mechitza, that even though we created an imaginary mechitza between the pasim, but once the people break through the Beina Pasim, then that destroys the mechitza. And therefore what we have to do is we have to get the people to go around the Beina Pasim. Now I'm not sure exactly how you accomplish that. Maybe you have signs, I don't know what you do. Or maybe hopefully the people will realize what they have to do. But anyway, we have to make sure that the Ovrei Rishus Harab will not break through between the pas. Chachamim Omrim Eino Tzorach. The Chachamim hold that we don't apply the principle of Rabim Bokim Umevatlim Es HaMechitza. The status of the Mechitza is valid even if the people, and in this case the Rabim, break through the Mechitzas. Meaning that according to Chachamim, once the Torah has validated these imaginary mechitzas, that's it. We're going to rely on them. And we don't mind if the people actually don't pay any attention to this mechitzas. They don't recognize it. They go right through the mechitzas. Because the mechitzas is pure air. So the Gemara quotes now a statement of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Loza. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Loza, the Amri Chavayu, Kan Hodicha Kochan Shel Mechitzos. According to Chachamim, you see the power of the legality and the legal entity of a Mechitza. Look how powerful it is. We're going to recognize the Mechitza even though no one's paying any attention to it. You know, the Rabbim are going right through the Mechitzos. Now, when the Amoraim, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Loza, they use the term Kan, what does that mean? Usually, if you say Kan, Lo Diacha, etc., means that that's the way you hold. You know, you're amazed at the far-reaching halacha, and you abide by it, you accept it. So Gemara says, Kan usvirale? Are you telling me that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Loza actually hold like the Chachamim in our Mishnah, that despite the fact that the Rabbim are breaking through these Mechitzas, the Mechitzas are still valid? For Amar Rabbi Barachon and Rabbi Yochanan, Yerushalayim il moli dal sosen in olos palayla, chayoven olem mishum rishus harabim. So what you have is, in Yerushalayim, you have a highway, so to speak, that splits the entire city, and it covers the area from one Rishus HaRabim to another Rishus HaRabim. And therefore, if you're going to carry four Amos on this highway, I'll call it, then you should be violating a D'oraisa of carrying four Amos in Rishus HaRabim. But the answer is Dalsos Neulos Balayla. That if at night they lock the doors, which means that now there's a wall that surrounds the city of Yerushalayim and there's no entry into that wall, so if you're outside those walls you won't be able to get in, because they locked the doors, is therefore there are no rabbim. The rabbim can't get in to this highway. He says, Yushalayim hoisa mukefes choma, hachoma lo hoisa yichol lo shamish ki mechitza kevin sharabim nichnasim b'shari ha'ir. So since during the daylight hours people break through, right, they go through the walls because there are openings and entranceways in the walls, and therefore there's no mechitza. Again, the only reason that we can salvage the situation is because of ne'ulos, because the doors are locked. But if the doors weren't locked, then we cannot consider the choma, the wall around Yerushalayim, that has entranceways, as a mechitza. And the reason for that is, since the doors are open, the rabbim will go through this wall in those places where there's an opening in the wall. So again, as far as Hilchas Mechitzas are concerned, we don't need Dalsos Neulos. We have valid Mechitzas, because there's a wall that surrounds the entire city of Yerushalayim. And what are you going to tell me, but there are entranceways? So what? Who cares about the entranceways? I mean, unless it was Paritz Meruba La Omed or something like that, but it's certainly not. So these are small entranceways. So basically you have Mechitzas that surround the entire Yerushalayim. So why are you telling me, well, no, the reason why it's mutter is because it's dalsos ne'ulos? The answer is that despite the existence of mechitzos, and the choma around Yerushalayim is a valid mechitza, what breaks through is not called a mechitza. That's called bekias rabim mevatelis es hamechitza. And if the doors were open 24/7, then the bekias rabim would undermine the mechitza. So my answer is Ella, but let's reinterpret the phrase Kan. When he says Kan lo diacha, velo svirale, Rabbi Yochanan was pointing out that according to Chachamim, who hold that Bekias Rabbi Einam Evatelis Mechitza, you see the extensive power and the validity of a Mechitza. That even though nobody's paying any attention to the mechitza. On the contrary, they're walking right through the mechitzos. It still has the status of mechitza. Rabbi Yochanan himself holds like Rabbi Yehuda that Bekiyas Rabim Mevatel Sa Mechitza. But Khan, he's saying that according to Chachamim, you see the amazing power, the far-reaching validity of a mechitza. But as a matter of fact, if you ask me what is Rabbi Yochanan himself hold, he himself holds like Rabbi Yehuda, and that's why in Yerushalayim he needs Dalsos Ne'ulos Balayla. Now, why Dalsos Ne'ulos Balayla should be enough if during the course of the day the doors are open? He says the following: Yerushalayim Hayu Shnei Psachim Mishnei Tzidei Ha'ir Mechuvanim Zeh Keneged Zeh V'Oyser Shesarabim She Yaisa Rechava Sheish Esrei Amo Veres Beinei V'Yubon Sham Shishim Ribu Anoshim. So the highway that splits down the entire city of Yerushalayim has both conditions for Rosh Hashanah. Number one, it's 16 amos wide, and number two, there are more than 600,000 people that go up and down this highway during the course of a day. The Ritva, he says, writes, "Shayu boim liyushalayim mikol ha'amim." How do you calculate 600,000? Because Yerushalayim was a center of commerce, and they came and they gathered in from other nations of the world. And both Rashi that we quoted earlier and the Ritva hold that you need Shishim Ribuy Anoshim that passed there in order to make it into Yerushalayim, to Rosh Hashanah. The Rambam holds in Perek Yudal Milcha Shabbos, Kol Makom Shu Rochav Sheish Esrei Amos, all you need is one condition, it's 16 Amos wide. Harehu Rosh Hashanah. The Ain't Tzach Sheyavru Sham Shishim Ribuy Anoshim. But Kevan Shed Dal So Se Ne'ulas Balayla Einen Echsheves Shusarab. So that the status of these these highways, as we call them in Yerushalayim, is that it loses its, even though it's 16 amos wide, it nevertheless forfeits the shame Rishusarabim because of Dalsos Ne'ulos Balayla. Vatam. So now he quotes Rashi. Kevin Shadal so said Nu'ulas Balaila Eina Doma Lamachna Yisrael Bimidbar. Now it's our definition of Rosh Hashanah is a mirror image of the Rosh Hashanah in the Midbar, which is called the Machna Yisrael. And the Machna Yisrael Haisa Pasuach Bechol Shah Lehiluch Harabim. So Machne Yisrael was open 24/7. But in the case of Yerushalayim, where it was Dalsos Nulus Balayla, it's no longer comparable to Machne Yisrael. Hence, it's not a Rosh Hashanah. Haritva Kosav, She Pesach, Shedalsosen Nulus Balayla, Nidon Kistima Gmura Umechitza Shlema, V'ena Rabin Mevatlin Osa. Kloma Dafka B'makom She'en Sham Mechitza Gmura, Rabin Mevatlin Es HaMechitza. But B'makom She'esh Mechitza Gmura, Ein Rabin Mevatlin Es HaMechitza. Now, exactly why the fact that it's locked at night gives it the status of a Mechitza, and therefore we don't apply the principle of Rabbi Mevatle Mechitza? Not sure. I guess what he's saying is that once I set it up as a Mechitza, then it retains its status even during the daylight hours, so that at night it's a full-fledged mechitza because it's closed on all sides. So that's, I don't know, that's a piece of the puzzle that's missing. Somehow, the fact that the dlosos are open during the day, it's not really a Pesach. In other words, you could break up a mechitza with something called a Pesach, maybe, or a pirtza, but the fact that you're going to close it, and it's only open on a temporary basis, that's not enough to upset and undermine its status as a mechitza. So this leads us to Rami, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda. This is where we're going to stop for today. But let's see if we can make a note of it. It is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom of Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. And with that, I will bid you a very good day and hope to see you tomorrow.
Okay.
Thank you.